All Elite Podcast. Covering all the latest news and results from the AEW.
Wait a minute. Sean Spears? Chair shot right to the side of the head of Cody.
This is pro wrestling analysis as you've never heard before.
Deathly Hallows!
Might be it.
1, 2, 3, can save it!
Coming to you every single week. So without any further delay, let's go all in and get the show started right now.
Hello and welcome everybody to AEW Dynamite Aftershock. I'm your host Zach Perez at Spots High on Twitter is where you can find me most of my days. And once again, we had another week of AEW Dynamite on Wednesday on TNT. And this was the first post-pay-per-view, the post-Full Gear episode of Dynamite, and you could definitely feel the Full Gear hangover. A little bit of a lackluster episode of Dynamite, not quite as hard-hitting, not quite as fast-paced, definitely a lot of bruised bodies and a lot of kind of leftover of the overbooking from Full Gear, if you could call it that. I definitely forgive them for that in a lot of senses, but a lot of kind of repetitive endings, a lot of kind of squash matches in this, and it just didn't quite feel like the same quality that we're used to getting on a weekend, week in, week out basis so far with AEW. So I think this was a little lesser than what we're expecting, but some of the high points of this week were extremely high, and it's definitely worth getting into those and running through the card as we always do. But one thing I do want to mention right off is something that I did have happen personally during the episode that made me mark out like I was a child. Was I got a retweet from Le Champion himself, Chris Jericho, which brought me back to, you know, my little 3-year-old self, I think, actually visited me and cut a promo for me not pissing my pants for having that happen. So I didn't know my 3-year-old self was healed, but he definitely was. I think he commented on how crappy my living room furniture was and told me that I should man up and be a better wrestling fan. So that was an awesome moment, and just really was really cool to see Chris Jericho take a moment out. And I shamelessly used my dog, who was playing with a champagne toy. So that just goes to show you, just like everything in the wrestling business, you gotta use what you got, baby. So, you know, definitely was a cool moment to have Chris Jericho do that. But just thought it was worth mentioning, especially because this was a little bit of a Chris Jericho heavy episode. It was cool to have a little bit of the bubbly be the reason that I got a little bit of a connection there with Chris Jericho for the first time on Twitter. But that was a cool little moment, and definitely made me mark out and be a little bit of a wrestling nerd and have a moment for myself. But thanks to my little dog Teddy for that. So but I want to jump right on into the card here and move on and get things going. So we did have Jon Moxley kick off the night for us here, and he just basically obliterated Michael Nakazawa via paradigm shift in the middle of the ring. So basically just showing that he was the stronger man of the two. You know, they had a nice little video package with Kenny Omega opening the night where you could see Kenny Omega all lacerated, all torn up, his back. Clearly there was at least some non-worked barbed wire being used on him for that match, because his back looked pretty pink and raw from that. So nice and peeled apart and not looking too pretty. So definitely some vicious looking marks across his back, and leaving some marks to remember him by, so to speak. And but this was just a little squash match to prove Jon Moxley's dominance and, you know, just prove that he basically did what he came to do in AEW and will continue to do so. Got on the mic afterwards and basically said that he was not lying in his promos anymore, which was a nice little callback to his interview with, I think it was Still Real to Us, which is pretty apropos, but he said that he felt like he was lying in his WWE promos because he'd say he'd eviscerate people. It was going to, you know, go out and eviscerate people at Hell in a Cell, or that he was going to bloodlet people, or, you know, all the typical, you know, I'm going to do this violence to you at said pay-per-view. By the way, order it on WWE Network, you know, that kind of stuff that WWE promos tend to be nowadays. But then you get to the match and it's, you know, 10 minutes long and it's a lot of grappling and no actual blood or weaponry. So that's basically what he was saying, was that there was no actual violence as was suggested by the promo. So he felt as if he was pretty much just lying to the fans to get them to buy it. So now he feels as if he's no longer lying and he's really the crazy SOB that he wants to be and that he's telling you he is. So that was a nice little callback, and this promo just felt very real, just like all of his promos have felt like since he's been kind of unshackled and allowed to be his real Jon Moxley character. So nice little quick promo, nothing too over the top, but he kind of led an open challenge, almost Aleister Black the roster, and basically without King Corbin-ing it, you know, and saying everybody had little balls, he just said, you know, whoever was out there that wanted to face the level of violence of what he did to Kenny Omega, somebody out there who wants to be the next victim, basically, go ahead and step to the line, and he's going to be the one to go ahead and put him back down. So he left that open, and we'll come back to that nice little thread later on down the line here, but that was where it was left, and he left the ring looking like a badass. So that's what you want your wrestlers to do, in case you were wondering, Vince, with your promo works. You don't want them with poop bags and barking chihuahuas and all that nonsense, or, you know, getting beat up by the person who's screwing their wife, or, you know, I digress. But moving on here, we had Dark Order versus Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy, or the Jurassic Express. I refuse to call them the Jurassic Express unless they have my boy Jungle Boy back, or my boy Luchasaurus behind them, but, you know, that's just my particulars. But we had Stu Grayson and Evil Uno probably looking at their strongest, I think, out of all of their matches that they've had so far. Some nice little early offense by Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy, kind of doing some leapfrogs off of each other, you know, some launch pads, you know, a la the Hardy Boys, you know, with the laying on all fours and diving and things like that. Nothing too complex, nothing too over the top, but then it ended up turning into the Dark Order, you know, playing the heel role, the heel monsters, and just starting to squash on the much smaller Marco Stunt and Jungle Boy, which, fair enough. Worth pointing out, you know, not to be too picky, but Marco Stunt did have a couple little botches and missed spots, but nothing too horribly glaring. You know, he is a younger wrestler. These things are going to happen, but, you know, people are going to point it out on the internet. I might as well mention it here. So it's nothing worth roasting him about or anything like that, but definitely was noticeable, and it was a springboard, I think, in particular, where he just kind of completely missed the ropes and looked like it could have ended badly. So, it, you know, just little things here. There were some botches throughout the night, and it just looked like things were not quite as polished as you're used to seeing from AEW. So a little less polish all around. Everybody didn't quite look like they were on their game as much as they usually are throughout the night. But still a great little match. Probably the most solid and most put together that Dark Order has looked. It made the most sense in terms of them looking like the monster and trying to crush the little guys. So, simple, decent little squash match. And a really awesome angle afterwards, too, where they tried to... they had their little minions come into the ring and start supporting Evil Uno, which I do have to say that looks pretty dark and sinister, where they're having the people kind of support him like a throne. That does look pretty awesome. But they basically had him come into the ring after Jungle Boy had been out of the ring, and they were trying to recruit Marco Stunt, and they were basically saying to having the audience try and give him a round of applause because he's a tough tough little guy and that he's resilient, and if he joins the Dark Order, his little cult of generic luchador masks there, that he'll basically have infinite power and the world is yours and will take over the world. But essentially, Jungle Boy comes in for the save initially, turns this down, knocks the mask off, as Marco seemed to be very tempted and almost put on the mask himself. And then he refuses, basically, after Jungle Boy does intervene. Then they do basically sick him, all of the Dark Order and his minions. And then Luchasaurus comes down for the triumphant save. And my God, he is so over. And his offense is so awesome and so unique for a big guy. And he's just doing spinning heel kicks and choke slams and, you know, just all over the place. Headbutts in midair. The guy's awesome. I mean, it just very quick, very simple, but awesome way to keep on the momentum for Luchasaurus and bring him back in after his injury. So hopefully this means he's ready to return for in-ring action very soon, and we'll start seeing him get his big push that he deserves. And you know, if there's a quote-unquote mid-card title, I think the perfect person to put it on that will make the fans very happy would be a Luchasaurus. Not that he needs it necessarily, but I think that would be a great guy to give it to really make the fans quite happy and get the fans cheering very vocally on your television product. But that's just me. You know, if it were a television title and you want your fans to cheer on television, put it on the damn dinosaur. That's just my thing. But I love the guy. I think he's awesome. He's one of my big time favorites so far in AEW, and has been since the Battle Royal. I think he the Casino Battle Royal there. I think that he was really, really awesome in that. Really showed off his unique style, and doing standing moonsaults and all that good stuff at his size is just awesome. But I digress a little bit. Don't want to get too far onto the Luchasaurus fan club. You know, if you want to join that, you can just follow me on Twitter, and we'll coordinate the times. But next up, we had Peter Avalon versus Sean Spears versus Darby Allin, which, you know, it was a triple threat, but really it wasn't. It didn't last long as a triple threat. You know, it ended up being that Sean Spears and Joey Janela rekindled their feud, essentially, because of the whole ending that happened at Full Gear, where Tully Blanchard got involved and ended the match up with the Spike Pile Driver. So it seems like things are not going to end there, which, good and bad, because their matchup wasn't the biggest barn burner in the world, but at the same time, I do feel like they both are more talented than what their match led on to be, so I think that they could put on a bigger and better spectacle. So let's see where this one goes. Hopefully they'll put on some more heat with this feud and get some things going. This little brawl in the middle of the match here was a nice little way of doing so. I do like that they're trying different ways of telling stories, so this triple threat devolving into this 2-on-2 was a nice little way of doing that. But I do have to say, you know, having basically a squash match, then a squash match, then a triple threat that ended up being a squash match after a brawl, it felt kind of very WWE and very repetitive. It was just kind of like, you know, quick, easy ways of threading along storylines without having much go on at the same time. So it just wasn't anything too compelling off the bat, and this was the first hour or so of television, so it wasn't anything too spectacular. But I did like the finish to this. And it did make sense. You know, there's no, as Excalibur said in this, there was no DQ in the triple threat, so it ended up being Allin versus Avalon, which, as we've seen from Avalon's treatment, that's a very undermatched, or he's very overmatched, I should say, in the situation. So he quickly got dispatched and ended up having Allen hit the coffin drop finisher, which I think is one of the most beautiful looking finishers in all of wrestling right now. Different approach to storytelling, but really it could have been executed better, I guess I could, is what I'm trying to say. And then we ended up having, right after that, Nyla Rose winning a squash match over Danny Jordan. There we go. I had to look at my notes to figure out who the jobber was, so forgive me. But yep, that just, again, another squash match, basically. So I think maybe that actually was the cap of the hour. So that was where I was kind of like, all right, we need to figure something out here, because this just ain't cutting it for me, especially after the spoiling you guys have done for what I've been watching from your wrestling product. So that was where I was getting a little worried, not quite happy with the first hour or so. Then we had a nice little segment, though. Ali cut a little promo with Tony Schiavone, talking about Brandi, but then they were interrupted, I should say, by Brandi Rhodes and Awesome Kong walking out and doing their little witchcraft voodoo gimmick thing. Not quite sure where this is going, but, you know, I'm giving it a chance now. I was a little full-on not going to like it at the beginning, but I do have to say they're keeping it consistent. They're threading storylines along with them. They're feeding it. They're having them run through the women's division in the sense of the attacks, and they're making Awesome Kong look like a monster, which she should, and they're not just throwing her into the division and having her destroy everybody, which helps protect them. So I think that's a good thing as well, and it is genuinely unsettling. Having them cut the hair off and the way that Awesome Kong swings around that knife, it really does come across as creepy. So I'll give it time and see where it goes. Still not quite sure what's going on, and even the announce team doesn't quite seem to know how to handle it, but we'll give it some time, see where it goes. But for now, it's definitely up in the air, and I'm not quite sure whether to call it heads or tails. But, give it time, and it's a good sign that they're giving the women's division some attention, especially given the criticism that side of things has gotten so far. And looking at the fact that there were so many squash matches at the beginning, you kind of can argue maybe we could have gotten a storyline in there about Riho or, Emi Sakura, that whole thing, but again, that's just me being picky, I guess, but the squash matches definitely tired me out a little bit here on this week's Dynamite. But then we ended up having probably the saving grace of the night, in my opinion, the absolute highlight of the night. And I'm not just biased at that because I got the retweet. It was Le Champion Chris Jericho coming out for an absolute barn burner of a promo, where he ended up getting basically interrupted from the beginning portion by MJF, who came out to Cody's music, which was a brilliant little tease to the crowd. Really got people going, because it seemed like the nice little traditional, heel starts a promo, face interrupts kind of moment, and it ended up instead being MJF, which they just had a brilliant back and forth chemistry. And I love the fact that MJF was playing on the protege factor, the fact that Cody was supposed to be his mentor and was kind of showing him the ropes and everything like that. And it was brilliant, brilliant stuff, especially because as you looked at them, you really felt as if you were seeing a mentor and you were seeing somebody who was painted in his image. And so because of that, it all made so much sense now, the narrative that was being told, the fact that, Cody tried to put him under his wing, but it never made sense. MJF is 100% a Jericho guy. He makes sense under Jericho's wing. His cocky attitude, the scarf, for God's sakes. I mean, that line we should have all known when Jericho said about the scarf, damn it. I mean, we should have known right then and there. But we were all too foolish. We were all mesmerized by the Burberry. But you know, this just was great stuff. You know, they had a brilliant chemistry back and forth. I thought it was hilarious how they kept going back and forth. You know, him saying, "Do you want me to join the inner circle? Because it sounds like you want me to join the inner circle." And that bantering back and forth, teasing the crowd, and they got the crowd to both cheer, boo, and get absolutely encapsulated and dejected all in one promo. And it was just awesome stuff. It just felt like somebody looking into the mirror at their future and also looking at the past. It was just insane level meta stuff. And I think that this partnership between MJF and Jericho is going to be fireworks. And one line in particular that was awesome was when they were talking about how, or Jericho brought up the fact that MJF, you know, being a three-letter abbreviation, and he basically said that it was as if, you know, his parents were at home watching WCW and got a little hot and bothered while he was beating up on Juventud Guerrera back in the day. And he basically said, "Hoovy, who is that?" And he just said, "Google it, baby, Google it." And that line got the crowd to pop, and Jericho was just so quick on his feet, so brilliant, and continues to be one of the best promo guys in the industry, and having him on the mic with MJF is just going to create so many memeable, so many quotable, so many memorable moments that I think it's going to create some of the best promo work and probably some of the best television in general that we've seen probably since the Attitude Era, you know, with the likes of Austin and The Rock and Jericho, you know, doing their work that they did when they were unscripted and just allowed to do what they do best and be in control of their character and be in control of the person that they are. So I think this is just brilliant example of what unscripted work can lead to. And I think that this was the highlight of the night and probably really saved the night for me all in all. So great stuff. But we did end up having a very surprise appearance by Cody after his name was mentioned once more, and he started delivering some moves, and despite one very botched power slam, he ended up actually taking some bumps at the hands of the debuting Wardlow. I mean, this was a crazy segment, kind of a little all over the place. I mean, they probably could have just left it at the back and forth between MJF and Jericho, but having Cody come out and prove the fact that he is ready for action and everything like that, I thought that was kind of brilliant. I wish that it was a little cleaner. I wish that he didn't have the botched power slam attempt on Jericho, so that it would have been perfectly clean and everything. But, you know, that's the nature of wrestling. You're going to have those moments happen. But I think that that's kind of what made it so that people aren't going to have this be the sticking point of this. I think that it's just the way it is. But all in all, this was an awesome segment and really just one of the better segments in AEW so far, where it just felt complete. You know, you had a little bit of everything. You had the face coming in for the save of, trying to keep the heels at bay. And it just felt like really good old school stuff. You know, a little bit of what everybody could want. You know, a little bit of the wrestling action mixed in with some great entertaining mic work and really great heel work and just really great stuff. And Jericho and MJF as a duo is just something that signed me up for. And Wardlow looked really impressive, really big dude, and had the Burberry tie on, so seems like he's going to be one of MJF's stooges, so that's an interesting dynamic there, and we'll see how that plays out. But all in all, crazy ass segment, and nice. But moving on here, next we had Pac taking on Hangman Adam Page, and this was basically a rematch from their match at Full Gear. And I actually think this was a bit of an upgrade from their match at Full Gear. Pretty much the same kind of matchup, really hard hitting, technically sound matchup. Pretty much a retelling of the story, kind of like a redo, if you will. But just in the best way possible. I think that giving them more time with this is actually a good thing. I saw a lot of criticism, a lot of people saying, why are they doing it so soon? You know, is it a rubber match? Are they just trying to rush to the finish of this feud? And are they saying that they don't believe in it? And I don't think that's really the case. I think that they're just kind of going old school with this and just really selling it on the fact that they're putting on great matches and they're just going to kind of let them brawl it out and show that they're going to essentially just tool to the death and keep having these matches until they settle it for good and have that one blow off where they either, well, it's not going to happen because Pac is a bastard, so he's not going to shake his hand, but you know, something to settle it where it feels definitive and it feels like one or the other has ended it for good and they don't feel like they have to face each other again. So I think this is smart, and I think it continues it in a sensical way, and I think these two paired together right now makes a lot of sense, especially with some people on the mend for the moment. So smart, smart stuff, and really, really good way to cap this off, and I think that pairing them all together just makes a lot of sense, and the finish, brilliant way to do it. You know, we had the buckshot lariat that went for a near fall, and then we ended up having the black arrow into the black arrow into the brutalizer combo for the win, which is a phenomenal combo of moves. It looks so lethal and it just goes so sequentially together. So I think that's a nice little spot to end any given matchup. So nice little way to cap off the match there, and a nice little match in an otherwise kind of devoid card of matchups, unfortunately. So very, very solid and very good retelling of their match at Full Gear, and I'm excited to see where this goes and excited to see what new heights they explore with these two very talented wrestlers. And before we got to our main event of the evening, we had cameras cut backstage where the Young Bucks were continuing their feud with Santana and Ortiz. They were brawling in the back, and a nice little moment where Santana hit a beautiful dive off of a forklift while the four men were all brawling, using every available weapon possible. The only thing I did not like about this brawl was the fact that it got cut off by commercial. Ended up having to watch probably a good chunk of it in a tiny little screen on commercial break while it was on TNT television. So that's my only complaint. But I digress. There was a nice cool little moment where a bathroom door got kicked open, or a closet door or something along those lines, and inside was Orange Cassidy, hands in pockets, all that good stuff, ready for a fight, or ready to just stand there, you know, as was the case here. So didn't end up doing anything, you know. I think it was Santana who just kind of walked up and casually just shut the door and didn't want a part of that. So that was pretty cool, and you know, just involving him in the programming and in little ways as they can. But just brawling all over the arena, and ended up spilling out into the actual main area, into the ring and through the crowd, through the crowd and into the ring, and ended up going through and taking out their sock full of baseballs that they've been using since Full Gear, or maybe it was since before Full Gear, using that on Nick Jackson's knee, and just some brutal looking moves to try and sell the fact that they're basically these street thugs looking to attack the Bucks, and a nice little spot. But Private Party ended up running in for the save, and they did end up putting one of the Jacksons through the through the set, similarly how they did the Rock and Roll Express. So good little callback to that after they did the NWO-esque spray painting of the spot where they were going to put them through. So nice little quick segment, but you know, just a little bit lackluster, as was the case for a lot of what happened this evening, unfortunately. But we did end up rolling into the main event, which was the AEW Tag Team Championship match. SCU taking on Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. Nice, hard-hitting main event. Picked up the pace a little bit from what we had seen earlier on in the night. And just quick going on. And, you know, everybody got a little bit of offense in. You know, some chops from Jericho that reverberated through the arena. And just a quick little pace and got things going off the bat nice. And but the main story here, not so much the match, you know, solid, but nothing too special. But it was the fact that Scorpio Sky ended up taking the pin on Jericho. Jericho's first loss in AEW, his first pinfall that he's taken in AEW, anyway, I should say. So that is very, very big stuff. You know, it looked like Jericho was setting up for a victory. Hit a code breaker. It looked like things were going his way. But then a small package roll up. I know. Again, a roll up. I know. Yep, it's overdone. But in this case, it made sense. You know, it's the AEW champion. You know, he gets bested in this case. It's a big deal. So in this case, you could actually do it, and it actually makes sense. Isn't that crazy how if you didn't use it all the time and you didn't overuse it and make me want to, you know, just blow my brains out every time I hear the words roll up, then I could actually believe this and make this a cool moment. But, you know, it's tarnished by the time you guys bring it to me and I want it to be cool. But yeah, all in all, I still can forgive it. This was still an awesome way to end it and made Scorpio Sky look like $1 million. And I'm sure, you know, everybody's happy about that. JR especially seems to be super high on him, and I completely understand why. So nice that SCU looks great with the tag team champions, and I know they've got a lot of history with the Young Bucks and, you know, with their Southern California roots and everything. So it was awesome the way they ended it, and Jericho throwing a temper tantrum was a nice way to go off the air. So overall, not the best night of AEW Dynamite. You know, it definitely could have been a lot better, but, you know, the MJF Chris Jericho highlight was an awesome takeaway out of the evening, and if that's the only takeaway, then I'm very much happy with that being the one. And the Pac versus Adam Page match was great, kind of like a free pay-per-view match, and, you know, it just is. For a young company, they're still getting a lot figured out. You know, this is definitely a bit of a miss for a after pay-per-view show, but still very, very solid for their product, and I think that they just will continue to get better with time. And I think that this Darby Allin versus Jon Moxley match is going to be fantastic, and I like the fact that they're still extending some feuds more long term. So let's see where this all goes, and hopefully you'll be joining me again next week as we continue to review the Dynamite product. Again, I have been your host, Zach Perez, at Spots High on Twitter, and we'll be back here on the WWE Podcast for another AEW Dynamite Aftershock next week. But for now, goodbye and good night.